This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Friday, April 19th, 2024. I'm Caleb Brown. When we compare the wealth of young people and how they're doing relative to previous generations, there are many reasons to be optimistic. Economist Jeremy Horpadal shares that optimism with one big exception: housing. And when it comes to boosting the trajectory for wealth accumulation, housing is a big component. We spoke last month in Dallas.
There are a lot of conversations about the relative wealth of age cohorts in the United States of America. So we look at the silent generation. Joe Biden is a member of the silent generation. He is not, in fact, a baby boomer.
He's too old.
Newsflash. He's too old to be a boomer. Baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, and apologies to the younger people, etc. So when we understand that, we can look at data of wealth, and wealth tends to increase as you age, as you get older, because you've developed skills, you've purchased
assets
that go up in value, not to be confused with things like cars. When we look at that, there are a lot of misconceptions that people have about the relative wealth of these age cohorts and whether or not, for example, you or I are doing better than our parents did 20 plus years ago when they were our age. I guess that's a valuable benchmark to some extent, being able to look at how were your parents doing? Are you doing better or worse than your parents did at a particular point in time?
That's right. I mean, and I think there is this perception that the current generation is doing worse than past generations. I mean, even you know, 20 years ago, but some people say, well, in the 50s, you know, you see these social media memes, which, you know, you can ignore them if you want, but they're all over the place. Oh, in the 1950s, a family on one income could afford a car and a college education and a home. And you can't do that today, right? People have this real nostalgia for many past decades, including bad decades like the 1970s. People have nostalgia for, you know, how families were doing, and wealth is a big part of how people think about what people are doing.
As Don Boudreau, my former professor, once said, anybody who yearns for the 1970s either has dementia or is a misogynist. First of all, we're way better off than people in the 50s.
I think on almost every dimension that is measurable, we're better off, not only on income, but health, education. I mean, some of education is just accumulating years, but people, I think, in general, do know more things than in the past, despite, you know, someone will share, here's the eighth grade final exam from 1900, and you can't do it. But people today are better educated in most ways. But yeah, I think that compared to the 50s, the 70s, the 80s, there is this, I think, perception by people that young people today can't get ahead the way their parents could. But I think that most of the data that I've looked at suggests that not only is that wrong, it's phenomenally wrong that younger generations today are accumulating wealth. They have higher incomes than the past. And this is all adjusted for inflation, all those sorts of things. And here's where there's a real part to it. There is some sense in which younger generations today start accumulating wealth later because they're in school longer, but they have higher earning power over their entire lifetime. And they very quickly are able to catch up with past generations if we compare them to the same point in their life, right? So of course, older people today have more wealth than younger people today. This has always been true. But if we look at millennials today compared to boomers at the same age, millennials have a lot more wealth and they have a lot more income than past generations. And importantly, this is not due to things you might suspect are important, such as, oh, maybe it's because there's more dual income families. This is true if you compare boomers to past generations, but millennials, there aren't really more dual income families among millennials today than there were among boomers when they were the same age. That's not what's going on either.
All right. So when we evaluate the relative wealth at a similar age among different cohorts of Americans, what are the worst arguments that we ought to dispense with right away? One, of course, as you just mentioned, older people have more wealth than younger people.
Yes.
So the comparison at the same age, they're not even doing that.
Right. They just have more wealth. I think that people are often skeptical. Even if it is adjusted for inflation, people say, well, does that really, you know, capture the increase in the cost of living? Orrin Cass has a project where he tries to look at this question of, you know, is inflation adjustments, you know, missing some important part of it? I actually have a paper with Scott Winship where we look at this data and we say, no, it's actually not. Even if you pick things and just look at the nominal cost compared to wages, don't do any sort of quality adjustment. Cars are much better today than in the 80s or 70s, but throw all that out. Just look at the cost of a car. In our paper, Scott and I find that people are still doing better, even if you ignore all the quality adjustments to goods. So I think that, you know, one bad argument is that, well, sure, it's adjusted for inflation, but does that miss something? Is that not a correct way to do it? And we find that you don't need to do any inflation adjustment. Just compare prices then to wages then and prices now to wages now. Almost everything, except housing, which I think we'll talk a little bit about, is more affordable. And housing is roughly equally as affordable on many measures, barring right now when mortgage rates are really high. I mean, mortgage rates being high are going to, you know, totally throw out of whack. But, you know, mortgage rates were also really high in 1980. So if you compare it to 1980, it's still better now.
So with specific respect to housing, because this is such a large fraction of the average American's wealth is the value of the home that they own, we have seen, for the most part, year-over-year increases in the value of a home, with, you know, some exceptions.
Right.
But the older you are, the more likely you are to own a home. And we have severe restrictions on the ability of developers and others to make use of property in ways that they see fit. It is no secret that the best way to use a piece of property these days seems to be housing. And for young people who would like to grab that first rung of the economic ladder, to borrow the tired old phrase, that does appear to be quite a bit more difficult.
You know, I'm generally optimistic about many things, about how today's generation is doing. Housing is one place where I'm actually quite pessimistic. Things are worse in a sense. You said that often the best use of a piece of land is housing, but importantly, an asterisk to that is single family housing. In most cities, even major metropolitan areas, the vast majority of land is zoned for single family housing. And many people want that. I mean, I live in a single family home. I mean, many people want that lifestyle, but in most of the country, if you want to repurpose a parcel of land, even still for residential, we're not talking about building a glue factory. We're talking about another residential use that is prohibited by law. And because these supply restrictions have been in place in many cities for over 100 years, we are now starting to see the real bite of that, that the housing prices everywhere are going up. If you would have went back to the 80s or 90s, it was California and the Northeast where housing prices are out of control. It's everywhere now. You can look at any state over the past 4 years, housing prices are up 40%. And we've seen lots of inflation, but that's double the rate of inflation. That's way more than wage growth, right? 40% increase in housing prices where I live in Arkansas. This is insane. And people suspect, oh, maybe this is a bubble like it was in, you know, 2006 or so. I think there's a strong argument to be made that the reason housing prices are going up is not because of asset speculation. It's because these supply restrictions, zoning, and other rules are preventing people from building more housing everywhere. And this is now the place where if you own a home, so if we talk about young people today, if you own a home, you are seeing a large appreciation in the value of your assets and your wealth is going up. It's gone up tremendously for young people just since 2019. A lot of that was just due to housing prices going up, which on a balance sheet, that's wealth, but it's not the kind of wealth you can spend. It's also the kind of wealth where if you sell your home, well, you got to move somewhere else, right? And the houses are more expensive elsewhere. So that's one place where I would, you know, put a big footnote to what I'm saying is that people's wealth has gone up. Some of it's due to real, you know, stock markets going up, balances and savings accounts going up. But a lot of it is due to housing prices going up. So I think that that is a part that is good that people have that wealth. But for those that don't own a home yet, so young people, I mean, a lot of the, you know, viral TikTok videos about expenses you see are from young renters. Young renters are in a hard situation. They're seeing rent going up because rent goes up along with land values, but they're not accumulating any wealth from that. So I think that that's the real challenge for young people and for the country as a public policy question today about how we get housing prices under control.
Do we have a picture then of the contribution of housing to the relative wealth of age cohorts in America? Because I can imagine that it could be quite substantial.
Yeah, we have a picture. It's hard to show a picture on a podcast, but I'll try to draw it for you. If we look at for people born in the 90s, so very young people, and we look at their asset growth just in a three-year period between 2019 and 2022. So not even quite to the present, but to the most recent we have. The value of their housing assets have gone up over 100%, 127%. And that's the primary non-financial asset they have. But the value of their financial assets, so this is liquid assets, retirement accounts, those have gone up 48%. That's good, but the housing's over 100% growth. and non-financial assets, the kind of assets you could actually use to spend to pay for things, to go on vacations.
Liquid, relatively liquid.
Relatively liquid, or retirement accounts, which are not, you know, liquid right now, but will be when you get to 59 and a half or whatever it might be. Those have gone up, but not as much. So most of the growth is in non-financial assets, primarily housing.
Most of the growth.
This is looking at a survey the Federal Reserve does every 3 years. It's a very detailed survey called the Survey of Consumer Finances. Most of the growth is in housing values. That doesn't mean there isn't other growth. I mean, the stock market's way up from where it was 4 years ago, but most of the growth is in housing.
So for young people who are, let's be clear, less likely to vote than older people, the clear indication is that if we want young people to be able to have the kind of lifestyles that you and I enjoy and that our parents enjoy, we absolutely must be able to loosen up the process of building new housing and allowing people to buy new housing.
That's right. Building new housing and allowing for, if, you know, in this country, we have private property. We have a very strong tradition of that. If the owner of the private property decides the best use of the land is a duplex or a triplex or an apartment building, it would be much better if local zoning laws would allow that. Now, people that own homes often don't like that. They may not like the type of people that might move in, right? Young renters, they don't want them near them. But they also worry about that the value of their home will decline. I mean, people are very concerned about the value of their homes. I mean, all of, you know, HOA policy is built around this, right? That we want to preserve the value of our homes. But for people that are going to continue living in the same home, the value of your home is not, if it goes down 20% this year, you don't notice that. The only way you might notice is maybe your property tax bill will go down, right? For people that plan to stay in their home, people place a very strong emphasis on, I don't want my house to lose value, but, you know, that's thinking about housing as a financial asset rather than a place to live, which is primarily what housing should be about, a place for people to live.
Jeremy Horpadal is Associate Professor of Economics at the University of Central Arkansas. We spoke last month in Dallas. Subscribe to and rate the Cato Daily Podcast basically anywhere you like. And thank you for listening.